point, you're back, you're working, and you're still processing everything that's happened to you, even though you're realizing all the fortunate things that are ahead of you. At what point does, or we could probably just say, slowly then suddenly, that you recognize that your why for doing what you do, the giving, but telling your story or sharing your story either with audiences or coaching or one-on-one is a different path for you to take, but able to have almost maybe even a magnified impact from leading a nonprofit. How do you transition?
That actually happened very organically. I didn't seek out to be a speaker and an author, but when I went back to work, in fact, my first day back at work was the day of a general staff meeting. There were 400 people in the organization I was working for. It was Health and Human Services here in the state of Utah, and they asked me if I would introduce this new fundraising campaign and kind of reintroduce myself and just tell a little bit of my story. And that was the first time I'd been asked to do that in that format, in a very public format. And what you're seeing now with my face and my physical features is 100 times improved from where I was. At the time, my face was still completely paralyzed, my cheek, my lips, my eye, everything was drooping off my face. My eye was big and wide open. I looked like a different person. And as I told my story and explained about the giving side and the receiving side of life, I didn't know how it was going to be received, but I got to the end of my presentation and there was just silence. And I thought, oh no. And it felt like it lasted for a long time. And then all of a sudden, people started getting up out of their seats. And they gave me a standing ovation. And I realized in that moment that they weren't seeing my physical appearance. They were seeing my heart and my intent. And then from there, I mean, that one 15, 10-minute speech, very small, very short, people started saying, oh my gosh, you have to tell your story. You have to share your story. And I don't know. People started telling their friends, but I started getting asked to go into organizations and share my story. And then people said, oh, have you written this down? You have to write a book. And so it came very organically. And I didn't quit my job right away. I still worked at that job for about 3 more years. And then I finally got to the point where I realized I needed to step away so I could take better care of myself, go to my therapies, make improvement. But also, so I could start focusing on the next chapter of my life, which started with my book. But I was speaking all along. I didn't know you could have a job as a speaker. It didn't occur. I mean, I knew like you could go and you could do trainings and you could work for companies and do that, but I didn't think of it as that would be a job. And it was only after I was getting asked to do it so much, I thought, oh my gosh, I am going and spending so much time and energy doing this, I really need some form of compensation for all of the energy that I am putting out. And I thought, do I dare ask someone to compensate me for going to give a speech? We're going to talk? And that's how I discovered really that this is an industry. And so I had a company that wanted to hire me, and they said, well, of course you're part of the National Speakers Association, right? And I had never heard of the National Speakers Association. I didn't know it was a thing. And that introduced me to the fact that there's a whole industry in this, and there's a professional group that can help you improve, give better speeches, run a better business, like actually run this like an entrepreneur business. And so that was when I really got into that and started sharing my messages from bigger stages. And in the beginning, those stages might have been 15 or 20 or 30 people. But since then, they've been 300, 800, 1,000, 3,000 people at a time. And then I launched a YouTube channel and I had videos that went viral that have literally been seen by millions of people across the earth who I hope in those moments of their struggles realize there is hope, and they can hold on. So I think that this switch is exactly what I needed to do to be able to share messages, not just of hope and of navigating the challenges of life, but the message of anti-fragility, which we haven't really talked about that yet, but that's one of the main things I talk about now. Is I go into companies and I teach them that anti-fragility is a property of systems, not just in ways of thinking, but systems that help you improve and get better from challenges, struggles, mistakes, errors, stresses, all of the things that you think of in your mind as being negative, like that went wrong. You can get better and grow from those experiences.
You know, this is where I was, literally I had just circled my paper. I'm like, this is where I want to go next with this, because what's really interesting is that when we were talking and I heard anti-fragility, I didn't quite understand what that was going to mean. Anti-fragility in an interactions guru is kind of what you kind of, your mantra now. But listening to your story, it became very clear to me what that was. It's healing. It's listening. It's sharing. It's caring. It's all of that. But it's a process. It's a system at the same time. Was this something, now, excuse my ignorance, I don't know if it was a thing, or was this something that you found, or was it something that you just bundled?
It was something that I found. However, the way that I found it and what its original meaning when I found it does not match exactly what it is to me today.
Okay.
It is a term that was coined by a man named Nassim Taleb, and he is a mathematician and statistician. And he was talking about,
of course,
global economies and, you know, huge companies and countries, and how we've got to find a way to get better when black swan events like COVID, or like when something totally unexpected comes, rather than having it shut down the world, we've got to find a way to let those experiences build us and make us stronger. And so he was really talking about it on this large scale. So I started consuming all of his content and I read the books and I kept waiting for the part for like, okay, when is it going to apply to me? How is he going to teach me to become anti-fragile? And it never got there. That was not his focus. He really had this much larger picture in his mind of what it was. But it also came with sets of principles. And so I started looking at the principles and saying, okay, well, if the principle can apply to an organization, it can also apply to an individual. So how can I take this principle and apply it to me? How can I take this principle and help XYZ company apply it to their teams and become better, even though, you know, the product didn't launch the way that they wanted it to, or, you know, the tech bubble burst and something happened and everything went down. How can we take these principles and apply them? And the way that I describe it now in the simplest of terms is that there was a study in 1918 and it was studying trees. And they, when they would cut down a tree, they looked at the rings on the trees. And the rings on the trees show how old the tree is. And then it also shows the strength of the tree and the conditions of the environment during the time that the tree was growing. And so they measured all of those things. The study was replicated 100 years later in 2018. And they did the same comparison, went through the same process. Only these trees had been grown on tree farms, where you had the most ideal circumstance. They got the right amount of light. They got the right amount of water. But guess what they found out? The trees from 2018 were not as strong. They did not have the kind of ability to fight off disease. They could not thrive in anything but perfect circumstances. They simply didn't have what the trees that had to fight for life had. Those stresses that caused the trees to have to grow a little higher to be the ones to get the sunlight, or that had to survive the winds and still try to grow strong, or that went through droughts but still had to make do with the amount of water they had, were far stronger than the trees that were grown in perfect, unstressful situations. I tend to think that that very same thing is true of us. What are the situations that you learn the very most from?
The ones that has grounded us and made us think through it all.
The time maybe that you screwed up or that something was really, really hard and you had to find a way through it. It's not on the days that you're sailing through life. As much as we love those days and we love to recall those yacht day memories. Oh, I was on a boat and I was laying out under the sun and the dolphins were going alongside the boat and it was a perfect moment. That's great for a scrapbook album. That is not real life.
Yep.
Real life, we grow because of the stresses, because of the mistakes, because of the volatility, because of the unknowns. Those are the things that push us to innovate, to thrive, to come up with new ways of doing things so that we can get through it and come out better on the other side.
Well, that's kind of goes back to what I was saying, is like, we have a choice and we always have a choice.
We always have a choice. And we've seen evidence in recent years of companies that said, yeah, no, I'm not changing. Like, this is the way that we've always done things, that it's always worked. And those companies don't exist anymore. You look at the Kodaks and Blockbusters and these companies that had a model and it had always worked and they couldn't foresee a reason why they needed to change. Even when technology was changing, they doubled down and said, nope, we're gonna stick with what we've got and we're gonna find a way through.
Yeah.
They don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
So in order to be able to not just continue existing, but to get better, you have to implement systems that can help you grow through the chaos and the stress and the volatility of life.
So as you continue, as you personally, professionally continue to evolve to now speaking and coaching, I guess it seems like the natural transition to start writing and putting your thoughts down as well. But your books all kind of touch on different subjects too. It isn't any one, like, this is my focus, right? They're not anti-fragility, right? The Sun Still Shines is different from Imperfect Polly, which is different from 12 Days. There you go.
I have a bunch of books that I've got to get out to some event organizers. And so I have stacks all around me, which thank goodness you can't see at the moment. My brand new book that just launched 4 or 5 weeks ago is this one. And I know it's going to be backwards, but it's called Depression Fighter, Creating a Personalized Path to Resilience Through Adversity. But if you can see the title, Press On. Within the word depression, the solution is actually there. Press on, fighter. And the resilience and the anti-fragility aspect is very much a part of it in the mental wealth and mental health side of things. And so even though I don't have my anti-fragility book yet, that's coming. The Sun Still Shines, this is my memoir. This is my story. This is the firsthand account of you are sitting in the seat with me and we are going through this journey together and you are riding the hells and highs right along with me on the roller coaster. And what I found from publishing that book was you didn't have to have a brain tumor to relate to it. Everyone in life could relate to it because there was some aspect of the struggles of life and how you choose to move forward that people could learn from. And it became a best-selling book. It became an award-winning book. Now it hasn't sold millions of copies, but it sold 50,000 copies and has nearly 1,000 reviews on Amazon. But the thing that's fulfilling about it is when people write to me and they get lessons out of the book that I didn't put there. Because we all interpret things through our own personal lens. And so they read my words and applied them to their lives. And they write me and tell me about their experiences and what they learned and how it helped them get over something they've been dealing with for 30 years. And I am shocked and humbled and grateful that taking the chance to share my very vulnerable time of life can help other people get through they're vulnerable in hard times in life. And so with the messages that I get out there, yes, most of my corporate stuff is very focused on anti-fragility and the importance of interpersonal interactions. Because I found along the way that, especially when I was in the hospital and my body was very fragile, which is one of the reasons that anti-fragility also resonated with me, I felt so fragile. The way that people treated me at that time made a tremendous difference in my will to keep going. So I go in and I train in healthcare facilities, in places where there's a lot of interpersonal interactions, in banks, in credit unions. You know, you can have an interaction with something. You can do your job in a variety of different ways and check the box and say task completed. But how you do your job matters. And it will have a tremendous impact on what the patient or the customer walks away with, whether they have a positive experience or a negative experience. And so those have become my corporate topics, because those apply in very much to businesses. But in writing things down, I also realized I suddenly had a platform that I never had before. And it has given me an opportunity to share things, not just that apply to corporations, but that apply to people and can help them get through difficult times and keep that faith when times are hard. So I am writing the anti-fragility book. Right now it's tentatively going to be called The Anti-Fragile Mindset. But I also use my platform to be able to talk about the things that really resonate in my heart and spirit and that I want to be able to share with a wider audience.
As we start to wrap down on it, I know this has been a little bit longer than we had originally anticipated, but I've gotten so much out of this, and I'm sure everybody listening at home has too. If you were going to leave everybody with some thoughts going forward and saying, everybody at some point in time finds themselves in the middle of some sort of personalized trauma or storm, what do you want to say to them to give them hope and direction? And honestly, as we found, it's not always okay to just say it's going to be okay, because you need that, as Paul said, the cold truth. But what would you share with your audience?
What I would share is the title of my book, The Sun Still Shines. How we came to the title of that book was that we were in the darkest, cloudiest, stormiest period of our lives. And at one point in time, I had been in the hospital for 4 weeks and had not even left the hospital. I'd barely left the room. And one day, the sun was shining. My husband said, "We're getting out of here for a while." He put me in a wheelchair. We had two IV towers that were dragging along with us. He rolled me outside the doors, and I sat outside in a wheelchair, an eye patch on my eye, my face paralyzed, hooked to all of this equipment. But I was able to close my eyes and look up and feel that sunlight and the warmth radiating into me. And I thought, no matter how dark the storms of life, behind the clouds, the sun still shines. It is still there. You may need to wait for a while before those clouds part. You may have to go somewhere to get away from them. You have to do your part too, but the sun still shines. It is there. And true strength isn't about avoiding struggle, but using it to grow. And if you can remember those two things, you can get through everything and anything, even when things don't turn out the way that you want them to. You can find purpose in the way that they did turn out and use them to become better and stronger.
I couldn't think of a better way to wrap that up so beautifully. So thank you. I will cherish this. This was one of my favorite conversations out of 150 roles so far. Thank you for impacting my life and our audience and joining us this week on Entrepreneurial Impact.
Well, thank you. And I realize that to some people, they'll listen to the first half of this podcast and say, what the heck does this have to do with entrepreneurs? But the reality is it has to do with all of us. And whether the struggle is in your home, your family, your business, we all have to have that determination and make that choice for ourselves.
Sorry. Sorry.
We'll have to maybe edit that part. We all have to make that determination for ourselves that we can either let a struggle define us or refine us. And we have to choose to be refined and get better from that struggle. So I would like to just offer to your audience, anyone who is interested in learning more, email me at jody@jodyobrown.com. And I'm sure we can put that in the show notes.
Absolutely.
I will send you a free e-copy of my book, The Sun Still Shines, so that you can read a little bit more about the journey that I went through, which I hope will also help you as you navigate the challenges of life.
Well, I look forward to reading it. Well, Jody, thank you for joining us, and it's been my pleasure.
It's been my pleasure too. Thank you.